Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us on this Tuesday, and today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Fun show coming up today. Just a few moments, we'll be joined by Ivan Maisel from ESPN.com. We'll talk with him about defense going by the boards in college football, although we saw some pretty good defense over the weekend in the NFL. The Steelers played great defense in the victory over the Patriots. I thought the Eagles Sunday night played great defense in slowing down the Rams, and the Rams have slowed themselves down in each of the last 3 weeks. So we're seeing better defense in the NFL. Not a lot of defense in college football. We'll talk with Ivan Maisel about that in just a few minutes, and we're looking forward to that very, very much. Bill Bender's Sporting News is going to join us today. It's the holiday season. Ray Dittinger is going to join us and talk about his book, The Eagles Encyclopedia. It's the third edition that Ray has put out on the Eagles Encyclopedia, and I think it'll be fascinating to follow up with him on that and more. And Merrill Hodge coming up. We'll revisit with him on CTE. So we've got a lot going on the show today. And tomorrow we'll have a lot going on. We're going to take the show on the road the next 3 days. Tomorrow we'll be in Pittsburgh. Penn State has basketball coming up tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at PPG Paints Arena against 8-2 Duquesne. And so tomorrow's show will be in Pittsburgh. And tomorrow's show is going to focus a lot on college football because tomorrow is the early signing day. Actually, the early signing period actually goes tomorrow, Thursday, and Friday. But let's face it, 95% of it's being done tomorrow, if not 98% being done tomorrow. And Penn State's going to sign, expects to sign another great class. Penn State expects to do that. I think everyone's expecting that. There's also going to be possibly a lot of early entries that are going to be in spring practice out of this class as well. So we'll talk a lot of recruiting tomorrow in Pittsburgh. Then we go right from Pittsburgh to Tuscaloosa, and we'll do the show in Tuscaloosa on Thursday and Friday. So we have a lot going on. Don't forget Santa Claus coming up tonight. That's right. Talk with the Magic Radio this evening from 6 to 7. Countdown is on. 1 week from today is Christmas. Youngsters already getting excited for that. And so are we, as a matter of fact. 6 to 7 tonight, Santa Claus, right here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. We'll visit with Ivan Maisel from ESPN.com next on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back. Great to have you with us on the show today. Tomorrow's show in Pittsburgh as Penn State gets ready to play basketball with Duquesne. It's also tomorrow's going to be the first day of the early signing period for college football. We're going to have a lot of coverage tomorrow from Pittsburgh on the early signing period. Penn State's expected to sign another top class, and many members of that top class very well might be in spring practice for Penn State. I go back to last year, certain guys, for example, I thought Jesse Lucchetta was helped by being in the spring. Nick Tarburton, I thought, was helped. But I think above all, Micah Parsons was really helped last year. He signed his letter of intent a year ago this week, became an early entry, had to learn a new position, playing in space at linebacker. And I watched him in the spring learn, try to feel his way through it. Then the Micah Parsons I saw in August in training camp, it may not have been a 180, but it was a 120 for him. I mean, the kind of advancement that he had made as a linebacker, being here in the spring meant so much. And that's going to be the trend, I think, in college football. You're going to find now that if they can work it out as time goes, you're going to see as many as half the members of a class coming in early. And I think that's going to then start to progress toward two-thirds. Because you just, I mean, get your clock started. I mean, what are you doing in your last few months of high school anyway? No offense to all the high schools out there, but let's face it. Senioritis is a term for a reason. So they want to get started and get going. And you're going to see it might be double digits in this class for Penn State that ends up being an early entry. All right, let's talk about defense now. In college football, what defense? Penn State actually played terrific defense down the stretch. Terrific defense. Ivan Maisel, ESPN.com, joins us. Ivan, welcome back. Great to have you with us on the show.
Hey, Steve. How you doing?
Doing really well, thanks. I have to talk about, I want to start out with the article you wrote about the weekend the defense died in college football after the West Virginia-Oklahoma game and also LSU-Texas A&M. Old friend of mine, Tom Bradley, when he took the UCLA defensive coordinator's job a few years ago, I said to him, I said, you know what your job is? He said, what's that? I said, to get one additional stop each half. Is that about where we are now when you hire a defensive coordinator? Can they get you an additional stop each half?
It feels like that, doesn't it? You have your defenses at the top of the food chain, you know, the Alabamas and the Clemsons. But it's almost as if they are freak shows compared to what everybody else has. You know, it just feels like something has happened, like somebody flipped a switch in the game. And I was struck by the reaction to what I wrote. You know, a lot of it was, you know, people telling me, you know, stop yelling, get off my lawn, which, you know, I get that. there are, you know, I think young people like, you know, that the 52-51 game, and I can't stand them. So, you know, maybe that's all it is. It's just, you know, experience and age.
No, I don't know about that. Because I work with Jack Ham of the Penn State broadcast. And the two of us have felt the same. There was a game between Baylor and TCU a few years ago where Baylor won 62-59. And we're hanging in the hotel and, you know, watching the game. We find it unwatchable. I found West Virginia, Oklahoma unwatchable. I actually flipped over to Washington State.
Yeah, exactly. No, I covered West Virginia 70, Baylor 63. That was pretty much my reaction. Yeah, it was awful. You know, if you have dessert for every meal, pretty soon you get sick of dessert. I mean, you know, what makes touchdowns fun should be that they're hard to get. You have to earn them.
I mean, there's no question about that. You have to earn it. What strikes me, like obviously you've been in a lot of, you watch firsthand some of this. Have you observed the defensive players when they leave the field, for example, in a Big 12 game? None of them seem mad. I mean, in other words, shouldn't you be ticked off that you just gave up a touchdown? They're all like, that's okay. The offense will get it back.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And a lot of this is what, you know, the up-tempo spread has wrought. And it's a lot of it is simple math that you can't leave defensive players on the field for 85 to 95 plays a game and expect them to be able to perform well. But that's a lot of what, you know, we're asking these defenses to do. And it just, I keep waiting for the Football Rules Committee to step in and restore some balance to the game. And, you know, they did instruct the officials to, you know, not allow a snap until the defense has had time to make substitutions if the offense does. And that helped a lot. But it still feels like the game has tilted too heavily to offense for me anyway.
Football should still have a mix where defense and special teams makes an impact in the game. I totally agree with you about that. Now let's do something by the numbers here, and I'll take your numbers from your article. Dave Aranda, $2.5 million. Texas A&M's Mike Elko checking in at $1.8 million. Don Brown at Michigan, $1.4 million. So that comes out to, what, $6.2 million or something like that, some number like that, dollars with the defensive coordinators. that $6 million of defensive coordinators gave up a combined 206 points over the weekend.
Yeah, and you know, let's all recognize that the points come cheaply in overtimes. But
yes, that's true.
You know, however, and that was seven overtimes in that 74-72 game, but you at least wanted somebody to slow somebody down in the overtime, and that happened once out of 14 possessions, and it was the first possession. So I don't know. It bothers me. You know, if you listen to I've asked Nick Saban about it, and he rails basically the one that allows – you know, offensive linemen to go 3 yards down the field, which is, you know, was passed for the 09 season, which was the first year that Chip Kelly was at Oregon and introduced the up-tempo spread to the mainstream. So I think, you know, those things are hand in hand. And Pat Fitzgerald made the same comment or a similar comment about the 3 yards down the field. You know, defenses aren't able to use one of their key bellwethers as to whether a play is a run or a pass, so they don't know what to do. And I think somehow the rules committee needs to step in, and there's been absolutely no interest from them in doing so.
All right, so now let's get to the next part. Is it any coincidence that one national champion after another here in recent years all have been very good defensive teams?
Well, no, and that's a great point, because that's always been the case.
Yep.
You've always had to play defense to win. And, you know, I mean, and this is a great example. It will be painful for your listeners to hear. But, you know, what was the defining game, certainly of my teenage years? Alabama 14, Penn State 7.
That's right.
Yeah. Was anybody complaining because they didn't score enough? It's considered one of the great games of all time, and the tension of that goal line stand has become a historical touchstone of a game. You know, there's obviously a place for defense, and it's usually the place of the teams at the top.
You also wrote an article about Mack Brown returning to North Carolina. Mack's been out of the game for 5 years, just like Herm Edwards had been out of the game for several years before taking the Arizona State job. Hey, what did you think of the hire of Mack Brown at North Carolina? And you say that in some ways history works against him. What history will work against him here?
Well, I went back and looked, and God love Wikipedia, you know, rather than me having to dig up a list myself. They had a list of all the coaches in the history of college football that have gone back to a school. And I just kind of stuck to the modern era and looked at four guys in the Hall of Fame: Chris Ault at Nevada, John Robinson at USC, Bill Snyder at K-State, Johnny Majors at Pitt. And all of them on their last trip were not as effective as on previous trips. You know, so is that age? Is that, you know, who knows? Who knows what the reason is? But, and I specifically just said, you know, we can't make any judgments about Mack from this list, but it's instructive in the sense that it's hard to do. And, you know, I think North Carolina, you know, wanted Mack's ability to sell. You know, they've won five games in the last 2 years. They want Mack's ability to run a clean program. He's a great ambassador for whatever school he's coaching for. Terrific guy. You know, I've known Mack a long time and liked him. You know, but are you getting the Mack Brown that coached in Texas and from, you know, up to 2009, or are you getting the guy that coached the 4 years after that? And that's what we, you know, either one would be an improvement for the Tar Heels, mind you, but, you know. But I guess that's the big question.
I have to ask you a big picture. Now, you mentioned Alabama, Penn State, and 78 in the Sugar Bowl, and that was able to happen because Penn State was an independent, and they could, yep, they had the ability to then play Alabama in the Sugar Bowl in that game, 1-2. That's about the only way it was able to happen for a long time. Then we had the BCS. Now we have four. Are you comfortable with four right now? Because you know financially people are going to start talking about eight.
I love four. Four, I think, was brilliant because winning a conference championship is not sufficient to get into the playoffs. That's how hard it is to do.
Right.
I mean, and yeah, you don't have to win a conference championship in order to get in the playoffs, but you got to be better than that. You got to be the four best teams, and there's five power conferences. So the tension involved in that, I think, is wonderful. And I think the game has become more popular because of it. You know, would we enjoy if there were eight and you got all power fives and the best group of five champion and two at-large? Yeah, it'd be fine. I just think that there's, I just think this has worked out really well. You know, a lot of that is due to the credibility that we've all assigned the committee. The committee has done a good job the first 4 years in selecting the playoff. And, you know, we don't have the, you know, the, everybody whining about the BCS selectors and the system and the computer rankings, which drove me nuts.
Me too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, every other sport in the NCAA has a committee pick its postseason. You know, why couldn't we do that in football? And we're doing it, and it's working well.
Yeah.
You know, the, I think four is fine.
I have an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it and always enjoy your work very, very much.
Anytime, Steve. Thanks a lot.
Ivan Maisel, ESPN.com, one of the best. Bill Bender, sporting news coming up in the next half hour. Then Ray Dittinger at 4:06. We'll talk with Ray about his book on the Eagles Encyclopedia. We'll revisit with him. And then the final half hour, we'll hear from Merrill Hodge. Looking forward to that, as always. And again, tomorrow's a big day, National Signing Day for football. The Nittany Lions are expected, look, let's face it, 95% of classes are signed. There will be a second signing day, as usual, the first Wednesday in February. That's going to happen, and we'll have coverage of that as well. At that point, you sit back and you look at your class and say, okay, what are we missing? What do we need? Who are we in with? There are some guys that want to hold out. But I will say this, the pressure on the player that does not sign early is going to grow exponentially. Why? Because now, the pool isn't as deep. So everybody is out there going at you. Everybody. All right. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Bill Bender, sporting news coming up in the next few minutes as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Okay, another big week for college football, but this is signing week, and that's tomorrow. Full coverage coming up here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. We'll do the show from Pittsburgh tomorrow because Penn State's playing basketball. Duquesne Thursday show and Friday show will both be in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. We take the show everywhere. We even take it to foreign countries. Last month we did the show from Mexico. Look, Steph Curry may not believe in the moon landing, and you may not believe that we did the show in Mexico, but the moon landing happened and we did the show in Mexico last month. All right. It is always great to talk with Bill Bender, good friend from Sporting News, who's just one of the best out there. Bill, welcome back. It's great to have you with us on the show.
Steve, where'd the season go? I was just talking to Sean, and it seems like yesterday I was sitting with you in the Lash building, and we were talking about the upcoming season, and here we are, and it's getting up on Christmas. The college football season goes by so fast.
You know, it's funny. I was thinking the same thing the other day. I was getting ready for a basketball game, and I'm thinking, wow, football's over for the regular season. I mean, it's amazing, the flyby, and especially in the year where so many different things happened.
Oh, yeah. And then, you know, and in the Big Ten, it's this feeling of, I guess, two-pronged for me. I mean, one, you know, the Big Ten champ in a very strong division doesn't get in the playoff. And then two, you know, you get the shakeup with Urban Meyer leaving Ohio State 2 days later or retiring. And I was just thinking about this before I got on the phone, and I'm thinking, so who's going to take advantage of this? Is it going to be Ohio State with Ryan Day? Will it be Penn State with Franklin? Or, you know, I mean, in theory, you know, when the coach rankings come out next spring and summer, you got to think Jim Harbaugh might be number one despite no Big Ten titles.
Right. I mean, and that is something to be considered here. Ryan Day is going to do one of a couple of things here. He's either going to keep things status quo with the graph high, or they could dip down because Urban Meyer had that graph line as high as you could get it, really.
Well, I think we'll look back at that and just shake our heads. And I've been doing it all week because you look at the first thing that gets looked at here in Central Ohio is the 7-0 against Michigan. I get that. I understand that just from living here my whole life. But the next thing, 54-4 in Big Ten games.
Yeah.
I mean, that's over 7 years. We'll never see that again. I don't think we will, not in this age. And who, like I said, I mean, is Penn State going to be that team that takes advantage on signing day? Will it be Michigan? Will it be, you know, the team I'm watching real closely in the West, because I thought they played hard despite their record. I think you know what I'm going to say. Nebraska with Scott Frost. I think they're going to get really good really fast.
Yeah, Jack Hamm and I talked a couple times this year that by getting Adrian Martinez right away, it gave them a foundation to then build around that and to get good really fast.
Yeah, and you know, they were playing hard toward the end of the year. I know early it was brutal, but with first-year coaches, I think that's a trend I noticed this year. It would be really bad early. It was really bad for Chip Kelly early. But by the end of the year, UCLA had it going a little bit. Same thing with Nebraska. The Big Ten West is messy. And that was like, I wanted to run these by you. So after the championship game Saturday, I got home, knew the Big Ten wasn't going to get in. So the three proposed changes I had was one, and we can go down these one by one if you want. I think they should eliminate divisions, Steve. I really do. I think we should do what the Big 12 does, because the Big 12, that was the difference. Oklahoma correcting their mistake got them in the playoff.
I think it's something that needs to be considered, because the Big 10, with all due respect to Northwestern, and you and I both like Pat Fitzgerald a lot, but that was not a matchup of the two best teams.
No, and here's the thing. I think the Big Ten, you know, whether you're in Pennsylvania or Iowa or Wisconsin, I think most of us think alike. We have solid core values as people, and I think the Big Ten's almost doing the honorable thing to a fault. And I say that in terms of the only 14-team conference that plays 9 conference games, the only 14-team conference that doesn't play FCS opponents on top of that. And, you know, obviously with the Big Ten championship game, the divisional imbalance, it's hard to get into the playoff. I think the Big Ten has strengthened its schedule and strengthened the conference with good, solid coaching hires up and down. I mean, but Jeff Brohm can bite you on any given night. You know, P.J. Fleck can bite you on any given night. And I think they've almost set themselves up to a fault, and that's why they're not getting into the playoff by doing the honorable thing.
And I also think the College Football Playoff Committee has not done a good enough job of sending messages. For example, and I've mentioned this before. I mentioned it before he came on, Bill. I said, look, just each of these things are supposed to be a weekly snapshot, correct? And they only do 6 of them.
Right.
And in one of them, Alabama plays either Mercer or the Citadel. I would get in that room and I'd argue that in that week, I would drop them to 5th. And the reason, and again, that's my weekly snapshot. You played the Citadel. you go to fifth. And I look right in the camera and tell Nick Saban, saying, look, okay, you have nobody to blame but yourself. You scheduled them.
Yeah, and I mean, the same thing happened this year. I mean, probably the most compelling game I was at all year in the regular season was Ohio State-Penn State, because it was a season-shifting game for both teams. I mean, with right. that last 8 minutes shifted Ohio State's entire season. If they lose there and they lose to Purdue, who knows where they're at. If Penn State wins, maybe the Michigan State game's a little bit different. And, again, right. that's that division where Michigan's in the division too. And I kind of knew Michigan. We talked about that early in the season. I had a feeling Michigan was going to be good, but he's being judged on one game, which I don't think is necessarily fair because Ohio State just has more talent. But it's tough to win the Big Ten East. And I think it's tough, and you and I talked about this, it's tough to get – I don't see a scenario in the near future where there's going to be a Big Ten team that goes 13-0. I just don't see it. I know, especially with Urban leaving, I definitely don't see it.
Right. Well, in fact, Bill, I've said before, and you and I talked about this before, college football is the only sport that we have right now where there is incredible pressure to go undefeated. No other sport has the pressure to go undefeated. You have pressure every week, but not to go undefeated. College football has that. And by the way, if you happen to lose twice, you're a disgrace.
Well, and I think there's only a handful of teams that have the means to go undefeated. That have the depth to go undefeated. And the two of them, the two that stand out are the two that I think are going to be playing in the national championship game, Alabama and Clemson. And Clemson, Dabo, to his credit, he's done that. But if you look at the ACC, it kind of crumbled around them this year. Florida State's not down. Louisville turned into a disaster. I mean, they had a five-loss Pitt team, again, in the conference championship. So, and then the other point I was making is, at what point does Delaney or the Big Ten kind of lead the conversation to kind of poke Notre Dame a little bit? Now, don't get me wrong. Notre Dame deserves to be in this year, so I'm not trying to make anybody mad. 12-0, get it. You know, undefeated, beat Northwestern, Michigan, fine. But at what point do you push Notre Dame to play that 13th game? And I will say this. I think Notre Dame has the most on the line of any team in this playoff, because if they go get shellacked by Clemson, the next time that conversation might not be as friendly for them.
I agree with that completely. That's why when the playoff committee Final Four came out, I said Notre Dame should be four. And the only reason I said Notre Dame should be four is that they took no risk in the 13th week.
I totally agree. And I thought it might happen because then it would have even meant more, because then you throw them against Alabama and say, okay, you're in. Now you got to go play them and show us what you can do. And let's see what's different from 5 years ago when you played them, which, again, to Notre Dame's credit, I do think they're a better team than they were in 12. They've upgraded up front. They've got some All-American caliber players on both sides of the ball, and they're a better team. But I want to see what they do against Clemson, because, again, you could argue that Clemson-Notre Dame is basically kind of a 40 to 50% ACC championship game,
yes,
given Notre
yes,
Dame's five-game agreement with the conference.
Absolutely. In fact, what's interesting about Notre Dame is that, Bill, if you and I were sitting down 2 years ago, so it's 2016, hey, look at Notre Dame's future schedule in 18. Wow, they've got to play USC, Virginia Tech, Stanford, Michigan, and I'm trying to remember what the other one was.
Pitt. They played Pitt.
And Florida State.
Yeah, Florida State.
And in 2018, USC's mediocre, Florida State's mediocre, Virginia Tech's mediocre. This is not Stanford's best team. Michigan, obviously, is really good. I mean, they actually ended up having a schedule that helped them go 12-0 and actually didn't challenge them as much as we would have thought in 16.
Yeah, and they played Michigan early, and you know that really helped. That might have been a different game had they. Next year they'll play in October, and I think it'll be a different game, which is a weird game on Michigan's schedule after the Penn State. It's either before or after the Penn State game. It's a really strange date for that game, but it'll be a better game then. So, yeah, I mean, they basically got in by playing a bunch of average teams besides Michigan, I think. Like, just average to maybe a little bit above average. And I don't think they game the system. I just think there's, at some point, you want everybody playing. If you want a level playing field, and people talk about this all the time, they want it to be a level playing field, well, then everybody should play 9 conference games. And everybody should ditch the FCS. And everybody should play that 13th game. And I do think the Big 12, to their credit, I think they're on to something with the no-division format, because we'll be talking about Big 10 division imbalance in Chicago next year. That's a guaranteed topic of conversation. Yeah. And it's born out of the fact that the East continues to win but not get into the playoff.
That's because the Big 10 ends up, quote, eating its own. That's a big problem in the East.
And the bull record didn't help last year. Like, somebody asked me that last week. Well, what about the 7-1 bull record last year? The committee obviously did not care one bit. And they have – we do have some interesting bull matchups this year. I mean, I think you'd be hard-pressed to pick against Urban and Ohio State in his last game at the Rose Bowl.
That's right.
Fascinated by the Penn State-Kentucky matchup, because Kentucky's kind of a rock'em sock'em team, and it's Trace's last game. That'll be fun. And I think Michigan can make a statement, although it seems like they play Florida every year now. I think they're going to beat Florida again.
Yeah, I do too. So you said there was, what, 3 things you were thinking of?
Those are the 3. The divisions, rethink the 9 conference games, or either rethink it or push the other conferences to say, hey, you have to play 9 too. Especially the ACC and SEC, because they have been in the playoff every year. And then it's kind of just the third was like, I'd poke Notre Dame a little bit. I just would, because in my opinion, Notre Dame took the Big Ten spot they earned it.
Yeah.
And I got to make that clear.
Right.
But that could be the Big Ten spot.
I'll say this. When Jim Delaney tried to get Notre Dame in 99, he's the only person that's tried to do this the right way. In other words, you're either all in or you're all out. You know, the Big East, to me, that was part of the road to ruination for the Big East, was they became a league and not a conference, because some teams were in for hoops, some were not. And Notre Dame, hey, take our second bowl, take our second bowl bid. What?
Yeah.
I remember one year West Virginia had a great year, and they got the third bowl bid because Notre Dame got the second bowl bid. The ACC's doing the same thing, going down the same road with them.
Well, and again, Delaney has done everything right in terms of scheduling. I really believe that. But I would be more aggressive in my campaigning. I would, because we had to listen to Greg Sankey was out there advocating. Georgia finished ahead of Ohio State in the ranking. That drove me nuts, because Georgia lost 2 games. Georgia had their chance, essentially. Georgia had one of the worst calls on a fake punt that I've ever seen. And in the wrong – I mean, Alabama was ready for it. So why would – what did they do to deserve to be in the playoff other than blow a 14-point lead? And then you had Sankey – but to Greg Sankey's credit, he came out and campaigned for it, you know, and then the conversation – The conversation wasn't even Oklahoma and Ohio State. It was Oklahoma and Georgia. And I think that was – it's not because of some conspiracy. It's because Sankey was doing an effective job campaigning it.
No question. And not only they, but here's the part that becomes galling about the campaigning of it. In a 4-team playoff, no team should lose its way into it.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, people – the 8-team talk kicked up, and I get that, but – everybody has a different view on the 8-teamer too. It's not going to change. People will complain. Like with me, the 8-team playoff, I still don't really care about the conference championship games. Like, if Pitt or Northwestern won, they're not a playoff team to me. I mean, I don't think 5-team lost teams get into this. And our mutual friend Mike DeCourcy and I have had some really good discussions over the phone about this. That we've gotten a little heated on the phone, because I just don't I'm not a big believer in that. And, you know, Mike being a PA guy, he's going to get fired up with me. But I think the way I would have done it is you just take the 8 teams in the final rankings at the end of the regular season. I don't care if they won a conference championship. There was a pretty good – like this year, for example, the last weekend would have been Alabama-UCF, Clemson-Michigan, Ohio State-Notre Dame, Georgia, Oklahoma. I think that's pretty good if you put it on campus.
Yeah, I think I agree with that because, I mean, they sit down. If they're going to take the time, Bill, as a committee to rank them 1 through 25, because they don't just give us the Final Four. They rank them 1 through 25. Penn State's 12th.
Right.
Well, if they're going to take the time to do that, then why not just have them rank them 1 through 8 like that and move forward?
Oh, for sure. And I think that's a really good idea. And we'll eventually go to 8, I think. I know Bill Hancock continues to say there's not an appetite for it, and maybe among the power brokers there's not, but you can see enough of it from the fans that I think we'll get to 8 eventually. I do enjoy the 4-teamer, though. I really enjoy the exclusivity of it because I know, I mean, last year was kind of proof, and some of them have been duds, but I think we're going to get two pretty good games this year because of Tua and Kyler, and then in the other one, I do think Notre Dame's going to give Clemson a good shot. I just don't know if they have enough to beat that team.
I really like the 4 a lot, like you. I know 8 is inevitable, and I think in the end, there are certain circumstances beyond school's control and also the NCAA's control, like that case in California, which the NCAA is not confident they're going to win, where they're going to need money.
Right.
And how do you get there? Well, you open up the door to an 18 playoff, you will get more money.
That's all it is. And people say, well, they'll lose money from if we ditch conference championships, they'll lose money. There's always ways to find money. There's a you know, you can go to 8, you can figure out a way. I guess you could add a regular season game if you really needed to, but I don't think we do. But an 18 playoff would be fascinating. I think in the interim, though, the 4-team playoff is fun. It's fun arguing about number 5. I don't think we'll have as much fun arguing about number 9. And some teams, like you said, if we go to 8, there will be teams that back into the playoff. That's just how the numbers go. So
right.
That's just a warning because I still think the regular season would be protected. I was using the example that if we were 8 and using that model, I kind of said that LSU A&M 7 overtime game would have meant a lot more if LSU was playing for like the 8 spot.
Exactly right. Yeah, because I think there were 7 going into the A&M game. And of course, that loss in 7 overtimes dropped them out.
The regular season will always matter, but the regular season has changed because the landscape of college football has changed, you know? So I think people just have to adjust some of their priorities. I mean, Nick Saban said it best. It really has become all about the playoff, and maybe to a fault.
Bill, it is an absolute pleasure. I mean, I think we could do this for another couple hours here, but that's how much I enjoyed it. It's always fun having you on. The conversation's always great and meaningful.
Well, let's do it again soon, Steve. I'll catch you maybe before the playoff. We can do it again.
That sounds great. I look forward to that very much, Bill. Thanks so much.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you.
Bill Bender, Sporting News. We'll try and get a hold of Bill again right before the college football playoff weekend. We're going to do shows on the 27th and 28th on the Thursday and Friday. We're going to take Christmas Eve off. Sean kept complaining. I said, all right, we'll work Christmas Eve. We're going to take Christmas Day off because Sean whined, moaned, and complained about that. All right, fine. All right, but we're also going to take the 26th off as well. We're going to turn it into a nice long weekend. But the 27th, 28th, we'll be back. And we'll see if we can get Bill back on the show then to talk about the weekend because he offered to do it. I'm looking forward to I always look forward to talking to him anyway. Coming up in the next half hour, Ray Dittinger. We're going to talk about the Eagles Encyclopedia. Should be fun. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.